Our next item is developing technologies for school and work, and the person to present it is Larry Skutkan, who is the technology project leader in the Department of Educational Research of the American Printing House for the Blind. He has a long history in affairs dealing with blindness. He has written a number of programs to provide access to information on a number of platforms. Many of them are Apple platforms, but there are others. It is a pleasure to welcome Larry Skutkan to the convention. Here is Larry Skutkan.
Thank you. It is it really is an honor to address the National Federation of the Blind. American Printing House for the Blind celebrates the 150th anniversary of its founding this year. And back in 1858, when a group of legislators and concerned citizens formed an institution that could provide embossed textbooks for blind children in a few states, they had little idea what impact technology would have on this institution. It wasn't until years later that Braille even became available or invented. It wasn't until 60 years later, after the founding in the 1930s, that the printing house began recording material. And another 60 years later, when we formed a partnership with IBM to create the first Braille translation software on a large mainframe computer. In the 1980s, it was pretty well recognized that personal computers were going to have an impact on society and education. And the advisors to the printing house suggested that the research department add a technology section to create educational software for blind children. Well, back in the 1980s, as many of you can remember, or a few of you can, accessibility wasn't much of a concern. Actually, accessibility wasn't really even thought of in many cases. And so we had a big job ahead of us. We started with a three-prong approach. We had to fill some immediate needs first. There were some programs that teachers requested and kids needed in schools. And I remember one of the very first ones we did was back on the old Apple II, Apple Presents Apple. And it was just a little program to teach you the differences between a typewriter and a computer, what the cursor keys were, what the tab key was. We've come a long way since then. We also had, after we had gotten a few programs out for the Apple and a couple of educational titles from MEC, we also began to work on some internal software for APH to help us, for example, in the recording studio. We created a digital recording package so that the narrators could continue to operate as they had with their analog equipment and focus their talents on narrating and not have to worry about the technology. So they were able to use the same interface, the same big mechanical devices to start and rewind and check their work. They were a little surprised that there wasn't a second and a half delay every time they checked their work anymore. But they got used to that pretty quick, and they didn't object to eliminating that. They also didn't object to the elimination of all the WoW and Flutter. Well, as we developed these software packages, it quickly became apparent that there were some components that were common to a lot of software. And one of the first components we referred to as DARPAN, Digital Audio Recording Playback and Navigation Component. And what this did was offered us a tool to use in our other software. We use it today in a program that we still use in our studios called Studio Recorder, and I think many of you are probably familiar with it. It's an audio editing program that very much uses the Windows interface guidelines and common components so that you can almost go ahead and start editing and mixing and creating any kind of digital files without really having to know a lot about digital audio. Very powerful and fast program. But this component, this DARPAN, had some interesting characteristics to it. We were able to experiment a little bit with time scale modification, which is the idea that you can speed up the sound without distorting the pitch. We did a lot of work with pause detection and removal so that as a person was proofreading or even listening later on, you could navigate through the material in literary units rather than time, so you could actually divide the narrator's pauses into three categories. By sentences were shorter pauses, and paragraphs were a little bit longer, and sections were a little bit longer than that. And actually, we did some research and found that we could remove quite a bit of these pauses and reduce the time it took to listen to this audio even further. So, I'm glad I don't have my guide dog with me here today, because every time I talk about pause removal, he really gets nervous. Another component that, we use that component in several of our software packages, including BookWizard Reader and BookWizard Producer, which are two digital talking book programs, one to read digital talking books and one to create them. In fact, the BookWizard Producer, we have already created over 1,000 digital talking books for the National Library Service. And yeah, it's very exciting stuff. Another component that we developed early on was a Braille forward and reverse translation component. And that's used in a lot of our software. It actually has gone through many, many variations. It started out as a DOS program. We converted it to Windows, and now we've converted it to Linux to use on a product that we're working with right now in partnership with Levelstar, which is a small PDA that is a very advanced device, but this component is what provides us our forward and reverse translation. How do we decide what software we're going to write is something that people ask us a lot. And it's a bit of a complicated question because, as I mentioned, we have internal needs for software and we have a lot of needs out there in the schools, but there's no way that you can write a specialized piece of software for every need out there. So as with the general industry, we have to look and see, well, can this work with a more generalized approach like a screen reader? Or do we have to write a program from the ground up that's going to use the internal components of the operating system to give us the information we need? Much like, say, the MSAA approach that Microsoft is using, where theoretically the application knows more about what it needs to tell you than anyone does. And a perfect example of a program that is very difficult for a screen reader to work with is a typing tutor. There's the issue of announcing the correct material to type and not mangling the pronunciation. You know, we've all heard ASDF pronounced as ASDF. So, and also, you know, once the text is announced, we have to have the timing so that the student can type the letters. So we wrote one of our best-selling programs to date. It started out back in the Apple days, Talking Typer, and we converted it. Yeah, thank you. That's we converted it also to DOS and now to Windows. There are other typing programs out there now. And that is another really interesting aspect of developing software for a nonprofit organization like the American Printing House for the Blind. We fortunately don't have to worry too much about market. You know, it's not unusual for us to produce products that might sell 15 or 20 or 50 a year. And a for-profit company cannot possibly devote the hundreds and thousands of dollars in research and development and then actual component costs and then just sell 50 of them in a year. But you know what? If that's a product that 50 blind children need and that's what it's going to take for them to do their job or get their education, that's what we have to do. I think you see the same thing with textbooks. There's several textbooks that we may just print 5 or 10 of, and it can cost $20,000 or $30,000 to do the transcription and all the work necessary to get that book into the hands of a blind child. And that's another area where the technology is really focusing at American Printing House for the Blind. We've worked very closely with the DAISY Consortium and the Electronic Publishers Forum to get it so that we don't have to do it the old-fashioned way. We used to have to, back when we first wrote when we worked with IBM to write the first translation program, we had text entry was performed by double entry. Two people typed in the whole textbook and then we compared the errors. That was really the most efficient way to get that text in there. Well, now we have NIMAS, the National Instructional Materials Accessibility Standard, that is some legislation that helps get electronic files into the hands of people that need it, not directly into the students' hands, but into the Braille producers' hands to get that file converted without having to start from scratch. And as the gentleman from GE mentioned a minute ago, we have also realized that partnerships are a very powerful tool for us to be able to perform our mission. As I mentioned, we partnered with IBM back in the 60s. We partnered with Springer Design a few years ago to create a product called the Bookport that really was the very first electronic reading device that used synthesized portable electronic reading device. And, you know, now the Victor Reader Stream has come in, and that's fine with us. You know, that's good. If we were able to show another company that, hey, there really is a market out here for such a interesting and different kind of device, that's great. That's what the printing house is all about. We'll do that from now until whenever. Our latest partnership is with Levelstar. For years and years, the printing house has been looking for a way to create an electronic, I want to say much more than a note-taking device or a personal data assistant. This would be more like a mobile manager so that you can avoid, like the joke that I think we've all heard, you know, how many blind people does it take to cross a street? Well, two, one to cross and one to carry the shopping cart full of equipment behind them. Well, the Braille Plus and the Icon are two devices that are designed to eliminate that shopping cart full of equipment. This is a little device that's 6 inches by 3 inches, and is based on the Linux operating system and has all custom software in it to be able to do the kind of jobs that we need to be able to do in as efficient a manner as we can do. I'd like to talk to you a little bit also about some directions that we're heading in the future at APH. The gentleman a while ago talked a little bit about Web 2 and That obviously is a big concern for everyone. I think we all realize that the way that Google Docs and some of these other services work are the way of the future. In some ways, it's like it used to be when before personal computers, when everything was on a mainframe in a central area. Of course, things are a lot more powerful and slick and refined now.
2 minutes.
Okay, thank you. But working with companies like IBM and Google is the way that we need to go. I want to conclude by inviting you to, if you have product ideas for something that you would like to see developed, to check out our webpage at aph.org. There's a products link there and a products ideas link under that. If you will describe the idea you have for a product that you can't seem to get a bigger company to be interested in, write up the idea for us. We'll consider it, and like I say, we don't have to worry about how big a market is. If it's a market, it will penetrate. If it's an idea that has some merit for some people and is a valuable tool, we will seriously consider doing it. If you have any other questions, feel free to drop by our booth over here in the exhibit hall. Again, the American Printing House for the Blind, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Larry. I appreciate your presentation, I appreciate your work, and I appreciate the efforts of the American Printing House for the Blind to provide equal access to information to all.